Welcome, everybody. We're going to get started. Good. I'm glad so many people came today. So I'm going to introduce our moderator for the panel, and then I'll introduce myself and give a brief overview of the session. My name is Sally Fassler. I am currently the CFO of a company called Sankaty Advisors. Our founder and chief investment officer for Sankaty is a man named Jonathan Levine. Jonathan and his wife, Jeannie, started a foundation called the Crimson Lion Foundation, and they started it to support a number of nonprofit organizations that address pressing social issues, and they focus mainly on education, children and families, community and public service, health and welfare, discrimination, and poverty. The multidisciplinary efforts of these organizations serve to strengthen the foundations of society by serving communities directly and through research, innovation, public policy, and advocacy. They also sponsor 250 young women to come to this conference, which is great. So I'm sure some of you in this room were kind of beneficiaries of their generosity. So Sankaty Advisors and Crimson Lion is really proud to be a partner with the Massachusetts Conference for Women and to have all of you here today. And now I'm really happy to introduce our moderator for this panel and the session. The session is Brave Girls, Strategies for Strength. These topics are certainly near and dear to me, and we have an amazing session in store for you. I was just speaking with the women on the panel and our moderator for the panel, and everybody is way more impressive than I am, so I'll get off of here as quickly as possible. So the world is waiting for the next generation of strong women who will positively influence and shape our world. How do you become one of these women? How do you gain the confidence in your abilities to create change? How do you find something that is meaningful and drives you? Offering a mix of practical advice and inspirational real-life stories of the skills, success, and failures needed to become brave women and leaders of your life, we have the panelists here today, and I'm humbled to introduce them. I would like to introduce our thought leader, Stephanie Kaplan-Lewis. She co-founded Her Campus in 2009 as an undergrad at Harvard. She's grown Her Campus to over 6 million monthly users, with chapters in over 280 colleges worldwide. Lewis spearheads Her Campus's additional user-facing initiatives, including Her Campus Blogger Network and High School Ambassador Program, oversaw Her Campus's first book, The Her Campus Guide to College Life, and led Her Campus's 2013 acquisition of Her Uni Media Limited. She has been named to Inc. Magazine's 30 Under 30, Business Week's 25 Under 25, the Boston Globe's 25 Under 25, Glamour's 20 Amazing Young Women, and the Boston Globe's 25 Most Stylish Bostonians. She has served as a National Women's Health Week Ambassador and a Mass Challenge alumna in residence. Kaplan is a 2010 grad of Harvard, where she majored in psychology and minored in economics. So please help me in welcoming Stephanie to the stage.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me here today and for coming to this panel. As you just heard, we have a really exciting session in store for you. So I'm going to take a seat now and introduce our panelists who will make their way up to the stage, Markeisha Babers, Shree Bose, and Aaron Schrody, and then we'll get started. Hi, everyone. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. So to get started, why don't you each just introduce yourself, your name, where you go or went to school, and a little bit of background on kind of what it is you do that brings you here. And Shree, you can get started.
All right, sounds good. My name is Shree Bose. I am currently a senior at Stephanie's alma mater, actually, Harvard. I am majoring in molecular and cellular biology and minoring in global health and health policy, which is a long way of saying I really want to improve people's health. So when I was 15, my grandfather actually passed away of cancer, and at the time, I was a high school biology student, and I just couldn't understand what was going on. And so at the time, I went online, searched a lot, and decided that I really wanted to join a graduate level lab and start doing research. So I found a professor who was sort of willing to take me under her wing, and I did this really amazing project on drug resistance in ovarian cancer, which actually won me the grand prize of the Google Global Science Fair in 2011.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It was the first year they had the fair, so it was a really great experience that gave me a global platform to sort of talk about STEM advocacy issues and sort of STEM education in general. And I started realizing by talking to high school students that there was sort of a need for easy tools to get involved with technology. So when I came to Harvard and I was meeting all of these amazing people, I sort of started thinking about creating those tools. And so last year, along with an amazing co-founder named Mark, I co-founded a company called Piper, which creates these Minecraft toolboxes for kids to get started with building physical electronics while playing a virtual game. And sort of that interface brings kids together to do really amazing things. And we ran a Kickstarter earlier this year, and we are selling for Christmas. So that's kind of where I am.
Okay, so I'm Markeisha Babers. I'm 20 years old. I am a spoken word artist, and I am going to school for culinary arts as well. I travel around doing poetry for young girls and women just to inspire them to do things that people told me I couldn't do when I was young. You know, people told me that I couldn't do poetry. People told me that I couldn't rap because I was a girl, you know. So I travel around just to inspire young girls and young women like myself who have been told no their whole life so I could tell them yes.
Hi guys, I'm Erin Schrody, and I'm from the Bay Area. I'm from Northern California. And 11 years ago, next month, I co-founded with my mother a nonprofit called Turning Green, which is all around environmental education and advocacy. And I too, it started with a very personal experience with cancer. The county where I grew up, which is just over the Golden Gate Bridge, it's gorgeous, it's idyllic, it's beautiful, had the highest breast, prostate, and melanoma cancer rates in the world. And no one knew why. And in one of the most affluent counties in the country, we were told there wasn't enough money to do the testing. And my mom came home, she was a television producer at the time, has now become a radical grassroots activist, and that wasn't good enough for her. And it planted the seeds in my head. She did a door-to-door campaign and went around and asked people why. Why are cancer rates off the charts? And no one had answers, and nothing correlated. They worked with the UCSF Department of Epidemiology. And I was 11 when that started. And by the time I was 13, there was a study that came out linking the ingredients in personal care products. So who here used soap today? Yeah, good job, guys. What about toothpaste? Shampoo in the last 48 hours? Okay. Anybody also use maybe lip gloss or mascara? We're talking to a group of women. This is fun. So these are products we're using on our bodies every single day without second thought as to what's in them. And it turns out there's a pretty nasty concoction of chemicals that have links to cancer, birth defects, and reproductive harm. That was a really rude awakening for me as a 13-year-old. You sort of assume that someone's looking out for your health and well-being. And there's the beauty and the naivete of youth. You hear that something is wrong. You think, well, let's change it. We're not so stuck in our ways. We're not attached to some status quo. We don't have blind brand loyalty. So we started looking at the health and safety of personal care products and how you can inspire people to make better choices there, and then also looking at textiles, looking at school campuses, food, janitorial, and it really is all about an all-encompassing way of life, of approaching your day-to-day from a more conscious perspective.
Great. So,
oh, and I went to NYU. I graduated from New York University. I did it very unconventionally with 4 semesters out of the country.
Wow. Which countries were you in?
Ghana, Israel, Spain, and Argentina.
Wow. So Sri and Erin, you kind of touched on how you came about the work that you're doing now, but Markeisha, I'd love to hear kind of how you first, you know, started doing spoken word poetry and how your interest in that kind of began.
Well, I have been writing poetry since I was 9 years old, and I've been performing it since I was 12. I originally got into poetry because of some experiences I was going through at home, some really tough stuff that it was hard for me to deal with, and I didn't have friends, family. I couldn't talk to nobody. I didn't have nobody to go to, so I just started writing, and I just started writing, and when I was 12 years old, my mom had signed me up for therapy classes, and so one of the sessions that my therapist had me, she was made me go to my church and share one of my poems that I had wrote as, like, I don't know. it was really hard. I was so mad at her for making me do it. but that was the first time that I ever had performed my poem, and I realized, like, that writing it wasn't enough anymore. Just writing it down on paper wasn't enough. I had to share it. I had to release it in another way. And so when I was 17, a group called Get Lit had came to my school, and they were having classes for, they were having poetry classes. And at that time, I didn't know any teenagers who did poetry. I didn't know any kids my age who actually liked it. Like, everybody told me, like, I was dumb. So so when they came, they were only for boys. They were only letting boys in the class. And I was really upset because I was like, since when did all these people get involved in poetry and now it's only for boys? So I went to my English teacher and I wrote a poem and I gave it to him. And I was expressing to him how I was, like, wanting to be in the class. So he told me that I couldn't be in the class, but he let me perform my poem at the end of the class when they had, like, this little performance. And that I did my poem, and so Get Lit decided that the next year they came back to the school that they were going to open it up for boys and girls so that girls were allowed in the class now. And that was, like, kind of the first time that I had decided, like, that this is what I was meant to do, go and change things, because I felt like that was really unfair. Like, girls have things to say too, not just boys. So I got a glimpse of what my words can do and the change that my words could make, just, you know, if just in one little high school, you know. So that's what got me actually really excited about going different places and speaking my words, because I want to make a difference. This world is so unfair when it comes to, you know, boys versus girls, and I feel like that should change. So that's why I do what I do.
So, Markeisha, I'm glad you just touched on the kind of male-female equality topic, because that's something that I know both Sri and Aaron are really kind of passionate about as well. So I'd love to hear from each of you about kind of, you know, your kind of, you know, thoughts and experiences on kind of women's, you know, advancement or role in your sort of field or area of interest, as well as if there are any kind of personal experiences or anecdotes or stories that you want to share related to that.
Yeah, sure. So I think I was super oblivious growing up, to be honest. I grew up in a family where my brother was always the person who was teaching me science, so I never saw those gender barriers. And so when I was entering the Google Science Fair, my year, all of the age category winners were girls. And at the time, that made really big news, and everyone was like, oh my God, like, girls are supposedly bad at science. What's happening in the science fair? And so after the science fair, I got a lot of questions that were kind of related to, well, how does it feel to be a girl in science? And to tell you the truth, I had no answer. I would often just be like, I've never really dealt with anything. I guess it happens. And I have to tell you, the more I traveled around and I started talking to kids, I realized it was a very real problem. And there are really great organizations like this one out of Austin called Girl Start, which are working on combating those. But when sort of that gender dynamic became really real to me was when I was getting into technology entrepreneurship. So I grew up hearing that STEM was sort of science, technology, engineering, and math were kind of these fields that were mostly for guys. And I had heard the same thing about technology entrepreneurship, and I was like, well, the first one didn't apply to me, so probably the second one won't really be a thing. So we were creating our product, and then I went to my first technology conference. And this is like a high power event held in like a beautiful location. It's like 80% guys. And me and my co-founder, Mark, were walking around carrying our Piper box, which looks like a wooden box because we want kids to create it themselves. And we're carrying this box around. And I noticed that whenever I held it for 2 hours, guys would come up to me and their first reaction would always be, "Oh, are there cookies in that box?" Which was weird. And so at some point I was like, wait, is it just because I'm holding it? I don't get it. So I handed it off to Mark for like the next 2 hours. And he didn't get that question even a single time. His questions were all like, "Oh, what like new piece of technology is in your box?" And so sort of that like casual prejudice, it's not really overt. It's not like, "Oh, you're a girl, you're worse at this." It's sort of putting down in a very subtle way that you have to start noticing and you have to start seeing that, oh, well, this happens and I can't internalize that. I just have to see what's going on and I have to change it. I have to be the person who creates the next big technology thing or the next big health thing that goes on and shows the world that women can do everything. And I think that's what makes this event really great, because it brings together women who are doing that.
And Erin, I'd love to hear any, you know, thoughts or experiences you have on kind of these issues.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. I too, you know, co-founded this organization with my mother, was raised by a powerful woman surrounded by powerful women. We started out when we began, obviously, as a nonprofit, but went into the policy space. And I'm from California, and the first time I went to Sacramento was a very bizarre experience. I was a teenager. I wasn't old enough to vote. And I was walking through the halls of government, going around to meet with these legislators and acting as a lead witness, which basically just means I stand there in front of our legislation and tell them how I think and feel. And it was all men. And, you know, we look at our government right now. It's dominated by men. And to know that these are the people that are making the laws that tell us what we're going to do with our bodies, with our lives, with our wages, is honestly a very scary thing, because they're so removed from the female experience. So there, I remember standing there at the podium, looking up, looking around, and just being flabbergasted at the percentage of men to women leading our government, and that was at the state level. For the past 6-7 years, I've done a lot of corporate consultancy. I've been brought in to talk to people about millennials and sustainability. Every single one of you could go in and do the same thing. I was in the right place at the right time. We heard this morning them talking about it's a little bit of luck. I became your go-to green girl. I was an environmentalist before green was on the cover of the magazines or talked about in Hollywood. And when it started to become this trend, and when they realized that our generation was interested in it, particularly as it related to marketing and to consumers, and people said, "Oh, hey, Erin, can you come speak to us?" So I found myself in boardrooms all around the world. Let me tell you something about boardrooms. Old, white men. Period. That is who is deciding what is marketed to us, what goes into those little boxes that we buy on the shelves, how, why, when. They are so removed from what we actually want or need again. And you just see, I mean, I'm honored, I'm excited to get to be there and try to shift their perspectives. But I become a voice for all of us, that they're so rarely interacting with women, with young women. They just have no clue. You hear it in the sorts of questions that you're asked. And I take that as a really serious responsibility. If I'm supposed to be representing a gender, a generation, how can I, you know, best know sort of what it is actually that we want and need? But as you're, you know, considering career paths, there's a large role for executive corporate level positions for women. It ain't easy.
So, Erin, you just touched on the fact that you were just a teenager when you started this nonprofit and were lobbying against, you know, a multi-billion-dollar industry. So I'd love to hear about that, not just from kind of the standpoint of a woman, but being only a teenager and how you did all this.
So we started the nonprofit when I was 13 years old. I was in eighth grade. I'm now 24, so a whopping almost 11 years later. I never imagined that this would become my life's journey. This was something that seemed interesting to me as a teenager. If you really think about it, we are a bunch of ragtag teens going up against a multi-billion dollar beauty industry. It makes no sense. The odds are low. And it's very, very easy to give that shrug of inevitability, right? And I think that there's a lot of adults in the room that probably have. There's some of you that probably have my age. You just go, oh, why bother? But when you're 13, you think, oh, why not? And so that's that beauty. And I didn't even know what an industry meant. I didn't know what lobbyists were. I didn't know about the money in politics. I didn't understand how decisions were made, and I'm grateful. Because the only progress made in the world is made by unreasonable people, right? That's what George Bernard Shaw said. We were unreasonable. We didn't even know we were unreasonable. We were just following our hearts. And that's why it's so exciting to see all of you here today, because you can fail. We could fail. We didn't have to put a roof over our heads, put food on the table. I was very grateful to have a parent who could do that for me. So I had a little bit of flexibility to be able to take risks without the consequences being so great as they are now. I pay for my life. I have to support myself. So there are some changes that you make in your approach. But I was really shocked at how much people listened to me in these sorts of corporate and political and activism worlds, because I was different. You're all different. You were just in that room with 10,000 people, right? Okay. How many people were under age 25? Not a lot, right? Yeah, you're raising your hands. I think a lot of them are probably in this room right now. You still stand out. Use that to your advantage, because very quickly you get very old and you blend in with everyone else. So I think that going up against it, particularly in these corporate spheres, particularly in these political spheres, people listen, because you're unique. And that's something that we can all use to our advantage.
And now, sticking with Erin for a minute, you have kind of this unique working relationship in that you started the nonprofit with your mom. So I'd love to hear about how it is to have your mom as also your business partner of sorts.
Can you imagine what it would be like to work with your mom for 11 years? It's the greatest gift and the most sincere challenge, in all honesty. My mom's my best friend. She's my rock. She's my inspiration. But she knows me. But yes, she knows me better than anyone else. So we know where we can support each other best, where we falter. We can finish each other's sentences. And it's taken a while, and we have an amazing team. I have a brilliant staff in California who run the nonprofit on the day-to-day. My mom's the executive director. But it's a challenge, because in that forum, technically, she's my boss. However, I am out doing a lot of corporate work and consulting work and speaking work and get to bring people into our organization. And so it's a very delicate balance, because I think the bonds that you have with lifelong friends, you hear about, you know, co-founders, whether they're friends or whether they're family, that's really, really powerful. And I have that, and I know that she is there no matter what. I also know that she will challenge me where I need to be challenged. And you need those voices of reason that you can trust and that you know have your best interests at heart. And I know she always does. But it's not easy. It's not easy to be sort of shot down by your mom. It also changes the relationship. You know, sometimes I just want a mom. I've had a business partner for 11 years. And so for us, it's made us focus even more on that very sacred personal space. And I think as all of you go into the professional world, it's absolute imperative that you maintain something sacred in your personal life that's separate. And so for us to get to do that delicate balance, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm flying out to San Francisco tonight. I get to see my mom, and I'm so excited. I really am. She's an incredible inspiration. And when I was growing up, I'll just close with this, but my mom worked multiple jobs. And I would hear her working when I went to bed. She would be out. I'd be home with a sitter. I'd be staying late at school. And I would go, God, that's not going to be me. I'm going to get a job, a normal job. I would say, Mom, can't you just have a regular job? but she followed her heart. And in order to put me through school and give me the life I had, that meant she had to follow her heart in many directions all at once. And it really wasn't until I graduated from college and suddenly the reality of bills and self-sufficiency was upon me that I realized there's no other way I could do it. That it meant that I was going to put it together and give it my all to be able to fulfill my soul and also to survive. So I think just seeing a mother who was able to do that, when there's a will, there's a way, and was this eternal optimist, was an incredible gift that's forever been instilled in me.
So, Markeisha, you've been very modest so far, but you've done your spoken word poetry at a ton of really amazing places. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about some of the different places that you've gotten to perform and how those came about, and then tell us also about your book and CD and how those came about, too.
Okay. I've done quite a few conferences. I've done one like this in Philadelphia. I've done one in London, two in New York, just different places, Washington, D.C., Oregon. And they come about, the first one, New York, came about. It was a competition, and it was through this group called Girl Rising. And what it was they sent us this video of this girl named Senna who lived in Peru, and she lived in these mountains, and she had to walk all these miles to school and taught herself how to read and all this type of stuff. And her dad was a miner, and they were really poor, and they had us watch her life story on the video and then write a response poem to her life, because that's the organization Get Lit. That's what we do. We take classic poetry, which is Maya Angelou, Langston Hughes, Walt Whitman, things like that. We memorize it and we perform it, and then we also write responses to it, which is what we got out of the poem and what that poem made us feel, and we perform them together. So they were kind of giving us a challenge, can you write a response poem from this video? And so I wrote the response poem, and we recorded it, and we sent it in. And what originally was supposed to happen is they were just supposed to show the clip of me doing the poem in New York, if I won. Obviously I won. What wound up happening is they decided that they no longer wanted to just show the clip. They liked the poem so much that they wanted to fly me out. And so they were no, we actually want you here on stage when Senna's here on stage. So I was really excited, because they were so you're going to New York? And I'm yay! And they were it's in 3 days. And I'm what? So, at the time I was living in Watts, California, and we weren't really stable at the time. So it's you got 3 days to get your hair done, get some clothes and get some luggage and get to New York City. And I'm what do you want me to do? How am I going to do that? You going to help me? My mom, she was running around with a chicken with her head cut off. She was doing so much stuff. I tell her to this day, I really appreciate it, because if it wasn't for my mom, I would have probably gone to New York City looking, oh my God. But, we got everything together, wound up getting everything together. We went to New York. My mom was there with me. And that was the very first out-of-state conference that I had done. And I got the chance to meet Senna. And what wound up happening is the next year after that, I had wrote the poem That Girl. And the same women, the women in the world, they wanted me to come back and do the conference again in New York City again. So this time I was a little, I had got my stuff together. So so I was able to, I was more confident. I was able to sleep on a flight and stuff. So so I went back to New York City, and that was the kickstart of me, of all the different places that I had went and all those type of things. It was really exciting, really, really. It really gave me a sense of purpose. When I first started, when I first figured this is what I wanted to do, I was now how am I gonna do it? How do I get started? Do I ask somebody to let me do a show? And so when I started doing that, and I started getting Oregon called and said that they wanted me to go and do a workshop and do the poem there at their conference, and then Washington, D.C. called, and it was kind of like, when Washington, D.C. called, it was a different experience because it was like after Oregon, and like I hadn't got any calls, I had no shows, no bookings, nothing, and this is what I do for a living, so in order to live, I have to do a show. So, like, I hadn't gotten anything for, like, 5 months. And I was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm going to get a 9-to-5 and just going to say I'm done with this poetry thing. You know, I guess people were right. I can't do it. It's not sustainable, you know. I was, like, getting ready to, like, just delete my whole, like, email because I had, like over 60,000 messages because I never checked it. And so I was like, I'm just about to delete this whole email and start over because I'm not checking all these messages. And so my cousin, she was telling me, she was like, well, you need to check your email one last time so you don't delete nothing important. And I was like, ain't nobody in my email. So she was like, check your email. So I checked it, and it was a good thing she had told me to check it because I had the trip from Washington, D.C. in 4 days. Like, they had emailed me that the day before I checked my email and said, we want you to come to Washington, D.C. and do a show. And, you know, it was in 4 days. So if I would have had just deleted my whole email, you know, I wouldn't even have that trip. And so, like, that was, like, a really... That was like, okay, so this is sustainable. I can do this. It might be ups and downs. It might be hard at first getting started, but I can do this. So that gave me the push to be like, I'm going to continue, and I'm going to keep doing it, and I'm going to do it, you know, for the rest of my life.
And then just briefly, but tell us about your book and CD.
Oh, yes. My book and my CD have the same name. It's called The Progression of Lady Lyrics. And they're not out yet, but they're going to be out, I'd say, February, March. They're going to be of 2016. They're going to be released. My book came about because I had, the organization I was with was doing a book, and they were doing an anthology, which is a bunch of different poems from a bunch of different people in one book. And, you know, I lived a hard life, so, like, I'm crazy, so. So when we did the book, I was like, wait, y'all just gonna, they just use one of my poems. So I'm like, no. I want all of my poems in the book. Like, I want more than just one. I want, you know, my own, you know, thing that I can call as mine that I said that I wrote, you know what I mean? So I went to the founder of the organization that I was working for, and I told her, like, okay, I want to write my own book. And, you know, because when they were getting their book together, they were like, they wanted us to, like, promote it and, you know, just do a bunch of stuff and help fundraise for all the fees and all that stuff and stuff like that, which was, you know, it was the organization I was working for, so that's what I had to do. But when it came time for me to tell her, like, okay, I work for you guys, but I also have a career for myself. So I want to write a book, and, you know, I would like it if you guys would promote it, if you guys would do what I did for you. And when it came down to that aspect, it was kind of like a deadline. It was like, yeah, okay, we'll kind of help you, but since it's not really going back to the organization, we won't do, you know, what you did for us, because it's not benefiting us. It's only going to be benefiting you. So that's when I realized, oh, okay, so I'm going to have to do this on my own, which I didn't have a problem with. So I sat down, and I just started writing, like, all my poems on my computer, put it in a little book format, and I printed out, like, a month ago, I printed out my first a copy of it, which was really exciting. I posted it on my Instagram like a weirdo. it was really exciting. I got my first copy of my book, and it's only one. It's only for me. But it was really exciting because it's tangible now. It's like there, and I can actually, you know, bring it to life. So, my CD, I've been trying to work on this CD for a long time. It's been different obstacles with my CD because I was trying to find, I had to find my voice first before I could do my CD, which basically was because I do poetry and then I also do rap music. And my rap music is way different than my poetry. And so I was kind of scared that if I put out a poetry CD or I put out a rap CD, that they would bump heads with each other. And like the people, my poetry fans would not want to book me for stuff because of the way that my rap CD is, or my rap fans wouldn't because of my poetry CD. So I was like dealing with that for a long time. Like, well, how do I find a balance between this crazy rap music and this crazy poetry? So I finally just decided that I don't have to censor myself. You know, my poetry resembles what I've been through, and my rap also does the same thing. It's just different ways. The way that my poetry tells what I've been through is more subtle, more sensitive, more empowering. The way that my rap tells what I've been through is just going head on with you. I'm just telling you exactly what I've seen, tell you exactly what I've been through, tell you exactly how I felt. And it might be a little rough, it might be a little edgy, but that's the life I lived. I live a rough, edgy life. So, you know, I just decided that if I'm going to speak my truth, I'm going to speak it no matter what people say, because it's my truth. It's what I've been through. So I finally got that running, and I've been going back and forth to the studio getting that done, and so it should be done by February. So I'm excited.
So now, Sheree, I'd love to hear more about kind of how the idea for Piper came about, but then also how you went from kind of idea to reality, because I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. They have all these ideas, but they think, you know, how can I actually make this come to life? And you were able to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's not only a disconnect in the tools that you have at your disposal to create things, but also the right people to make things happen. And I loved what you said about being true to your own voice, because I think ultimately that is the key to making things like what I did with Piper happen. I always kind of thought after the Google Science Fair, which I won at a pretty young age, I was 17, I kind of always thought of talking to other people and networking and doing that sort of thing as a quantity over quality measure. So I would talk to as many people as possible, but I wouldn't really share anything about my own life. There was nothing personal in that connection that I could look back on and be like, oh, I made a connection there that will be useful to me, because I didn't really know that person. So at some point along the way, I think I started discovering that the most valuable thing I could do was really to start telling people, you know, like my wildest dreams. So when I met my co-founder, Mark, we were both working at the NIH. We were just kind of brainstorming. He was telling me about this crazy project he was working on about taking these tiny microchips called Raspberry Pis and shipping them to Africa. And I started thinking, well, maybe I should share my dream of creating technology tools for kids here in the US that are exciting and engaging. And that's sort of how that collaboration happened. It happened because we both were very open about what we wanted to see in the world. And I think that's a very hard thing to do. It's not as easy as just saying, well, I want to be this, therefore I can share that with anyone who I talk to. Because I think very often, we aren't even sure of what those wildest dreams are. Oftentimes we hold those within ourselves and we think, if I share it, somebody might shoot me down. And that would kind of make this dream disappear. And so I think I struggled with that for a really long time, because I was in this realm of working in science and biology and research, and the idea of starting a business just kind of didn't seem possible. It kind of seemed like one of those things that I would always dream about, but it would never happen. And so really it came down to sharing that dream. It came down to finding somebody who shared my vision, and then
sort of finding the resources to make it happen. And the more I talked to Mark, the more we brainstormed together this product. We started applying to a lot of incubators, which are these amazing programs which basically give you grant funding at the very beginning and then give you mentorship for 6 or 12 months. And they walk you through the process of building a company, of building a product. And we did that. We signed up with an awesome incubator in San Francisco. And we sort of entered this period of development there that was all about just thinking of what kind of product we wanted to make. But I think the main barrier, that jump that I made that I think a lot of other people can make, was really between having an idea. I think we all have incredible ideas. And actually making it happen is really finding the right people to make it happen. And the way to do that, I think, is to share your dreams, your stories, and what makes this, your particular dreams, something that can really impact the world and do something amazing. And there are always people out there, even if you don't expect it, who are very willing to help you, who are excited to help you. And I think that was something I did when I was starting science research in high school, and it's something I did with Piper, and it's something I've been eternally grateful for.
So now, before we open it up to questions, I'd love to hear kind of what kind of is a key piece of advice or key takeaway that you'd like to leave everyone here with, and maybe Erin, you can start.
All right, I've got a few. My brain's been percolating. The first thing is that you all have to be that much more buttoned up, that much more articulate, that much more well-versed, that much more prepared, because you're young and you're women. And that's an unfortunate reality. But when you equip yourselves with the tools, when you arm yourselves with the knowledge, you're invincible. And I think that you can surprise people. That should not surprise people, but it still does. But really prepare yourselves. Do that homework. Come to the table ready, because then you can take on the naysayers in a far more effective way. Another piece of advice, people say, Erin, and I'm sure you guys get this, she's like, but how did you do it? How did you start? I just did something. I did one thing. And don't let yourself get so bogged down with everything that needs to be done or everything that you want to do or feel overwhelmed that you're only one person. You can't do it all. Newsflash, you might want to try, but you can't. And when I do try, I fail. But when I focus my efforts, then and only then can you have success. Then and only then can you rise to the top of whatever it is, and then you can scale, and then you can replicate. But do one thing, and do it well, because you're fiercely capable, and that sends a really powerful message. And the third piece of advice, we are all women, and I think mentorships and affinity groups are incredibly important and exciting and bolster me to be able to do. But don't strive to be the best woman blank. And we've heard this in some of the presidential debates. Oh, this is the best, you know, female version of blank. Oh, that's impressive for a woman. Let's erase that entirely. It ain't impressive for a woman, then it's impressive. You're not going to be the best girl version. You're going to be the best. So reach for the stars. Seriously. You guys have such incredible power to do that, and you sell yourself short when you set your goals too low.
I think a piece of advice that I would like for you guys to take away is don't doubt yourself. You know, through everybody, like, you got so many people that's gonna doubt you already. There's already so many odds against you. Don't be one of them. You know, if there's a million people telling you you can't, you tell yourself a million times you can. You know, because once you start doubting yourself, you really can't do anything. anymore. No matter how many people tell you you can't do it, as long as you believe you can do it, you can do it. So don't doubt yourself. That's what I would say. Don't doubt yourself no matter how many people doubt you.
I feel like all the good advice has already been taken. What I can say is carve your own opportunities. I think there are a lot of points out there where you're going to think you want to do something, and then you're going to run into barriers and think, oh, well, maybe I can't do it because those opportunities don't exist. What I would encourage you to do is think outside the box and actually create them. That's how you push progress forward, and I think the women on this stage are shining examples of that, of really carving their own way, their own paths, and their own opportunities, and I'm humbled to share the stage with them. But to all of you, what I want to say is if you are passionate about something, if there's something that keeps you up late at night watching YouTube videos about it, don't be afraid to reach out to people who can help you to see if there's anything at all you can do. My school didn't do science fairs. I literally cold emailed professors, got rejected, failed a lot, and then found the internship that I wanted. I mean, it's opportunities like that when you just have to create them, and that's what I would encourage from all of you, because it's how you're going to get involved in the fields that you love and how you're going to make change that not only matters to the world, but that really matters to you. Woo.
That was great. So now we have a few minutes left, and I'd love to open it up to questions from the audience. And if I call on you, maybe say also your name and where you go to school and what year you are. All the way over there.
Yeah, do they want to go to the mics?
Yeah, there's mics.
Oh, are there mics around?
There are mics.
Great.
The
shout.
Hi.
Hi.
Yay.
I was wondering.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Up there. This poem is called That Girl. This. People only see me as that girl. That fat girl, just a little too black girl, always sitting in the back girl. That girl. People tell me, you're weak girl. No one wants to hear you speak, girl. Look at me. I'm not at your feet, girl. Stop crying, girl. It's not like you're dying, girl. No one will like you for who you are. And your career definitely won't go far. Not with that hair, those clothes, those shoes. You really need to change all of you, girl. Sometimes I tell myself, you know, depression ain't cute, girl. And you should stop waiting and do what you have to do, girl. I mean, if you're gonna end it, then do it already, girl. Just make sure you keep your hands steady, girl. You wanna get it right, girl. Just wait till night, girl, then get the knife, girl. It only takes one slice, girl. Look at you, too weak to take your own life, girl. But God told me, aren't you tired of waiting to die, girl? All you have to do is try, girl. I gave you life to live, girl. I gave you your gift to give, girl. I am always here, girl. It's okay to shed a tear, girl. Just don't fear, girl, because you are that girl. Made strong enough to carry the world on your back, girl. So stand up straight, girl. You will be great, girl. It is your fate, girl. Don't worry about the past. Remember, who is first shall be last. So you've endured the worst, girl. Now it's your turn to be first, girl. Then God held out his hands. He said, take this, girl. Don't waste it, girl. You'll know when to use it, girl. It's a miracle, girl. Like you, you are a miracle, girl.
Thank you for asking that question, and thank you for that amazing performance. That was unbelievable. And honestly, I can't think of a better note to end on, but I think the panelists are going to stick around for a few minutes now if people want to come up and ask them questions directly. But I think leaving it right there is the most powerful way I can imagine to end this session. So thank you all so much for being here. Thank you for coming. Feel free to come up and ask.